This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Welcome to the English Football Show right here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and around the world. You're with Christopher Chrysostomou, Mitch Keating and Tim Spurliotis. And for the first time in English Football Show history, we are coming to you live on Facebook. So if you are listening to the show on FNR, switch to your Facebook feed and watch us live and you can see Tim Spurliotis' beautiful head.
Yeah.
We have a big show coming to you today with all the talk about the Champions League final plus Europa League. What else do we have on the show, boys?
Yeah, it's a big show. We're going to finish with a bang. Welcome to our Facebook Live viewers as well, so they can see what we do behind the mics.
And what is the name of our Facebook page?
What was that?
What's the name of the Facebook page?
English Football Show.
That's right.
That's exactly right. So we will review the big Champions League final and Europa League final. Some decent results for those clubs. We'll also discuss whether Maurizio Sarri will leave Chelsea. It's been rumoured that he will. And we will also, in Aussie Watch, discuss the players in England that may look at moving on since it's the end of the season.
Yeah, as well as we have an interview coming up at 1:30 with Michael Bridges from Optus Sport. And we'll take a look at the 10 most defining moments in English football for the season.
And of course, you can contact us at any time at EF_show on Twitter or English Football Show on Facebook. On our Facebook Live video, if you do have any questions that you would like us to answer, because we are taking questions from fans today, you can send us a message as well. So if you want to do that on the Facebook Live video. But we'll start with the big game in Madrid, and that was Liverpool's 2-0 victory over Tottenham in the Champions League final. Their sixth Champions League final victory now, which means they are one behind AC Milan for all-time Champions League final victories and, well, Real Madrid won 13. So yeah. They're not going to be getting past them anytime soon. But another victory for Liverpool in a Champions League final.
Yeah, firstly, congratulations after what you'd say has been a deserving season for the Reds, that they did need to take out some silverware at some point. And we saw the heartbreak following the last match day in the Premier League. But yeah, this was fantastic for them. While it was probably a gritty affair between the two sides, probably failed to impress a lot of fans, and many have actually judged it as the worst Champions League final ever. You do have to congratulate Liverpool. We saw all the scenes, you know, after the game, not just straight after, but the celebrations that went on for what seems like days now. And especially that one Memphis with Jordan Henderson and his father was one that I think a lot will remember. But for the football game itself, yeah, pretty gritty, ugly, you would call it. But, you know, for Liverpool fans, you get it done one way or the other.
I think you'll find a lot of people that said that it was the worst final ever are haters of those two clubs. Now, I'll go for Arsenal, so I'm not a fan of either, but you've got to give Liverpool credit for winning. And especially after the season that they had in the Premier League, finishing second in the high 90s in the points total. So I think they sort of deserve the trophy out of that.
And you've got to remember, these two sides have a three-week break as well. And plus, they're playing in heat that is unheard of in the English weather. So it's different temperatures for them as well. I think a lot of people just want to criticise English teams. I feel like there's a lot of people that perceive English clubs as not being able to play attractive football. And whenever they don't play attractive football, they want to have a go at them. Liverpool did have 64% pass accuracy, which was, I think, lower or equal to Huddersfield's pass completion rate in the...
Would have levelled as 19th worst. I think they just beat Cardiff by 0.1% and it would have ranked 19th worst in the Premier League for the season with what they showed up with against Tottenham in the final.
I'm pretty sure Tottenham had like close to 60% possession as well. Tottenham probably were the better team in the game, but when you do take the lead early on in a match, there's no need to attack consistently throughout the game, and Liverpool did what they had to do, and they did it well with their defence on their strong point. Virgil van Dijk and Joel Matip did not look like they were going to be beaten.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and they were just too strong, and they performed at the right time as well. I think the match against Barcelona where they caught up, that gave them quite a bit of confidence and belief that they could get the job done.
Yeah, I think the main thing to carry away from, I guess, Tottenham's attacking gameplay was Harry Kane's fitness or questionable fitness. And we said last week that, you know, the quotes emerging that he was fit to play. He put his hand up and said, I'm ready to go, you know, a few days out from the game, and he just didn't look up for it. It's obviously a player that was carrying something or had, you know, missed a lot of football leading up to that match. So, that was something that certainly backfired for Pochettino. But in that second half, they certainly turned it up a bit. Obviously, the Reds relied on Alisson a lot more, and he showed why he was the number one in the Premier League this season.
Did Pochettino take too long to make his substitutions?
Yeah, I think that, at half time, you'd think that with how the game had been played and the setup that he had run with, was it a 4-2-3-1 carrying into that game? I think it worked with when they were without the ball, especially out wide. I think Son and those that did track back for Tottenham did very well with how Liverpool's fullbacks were pushing forward. But I think that a substitution here around half time or shortly after might have just been what they needed. But this game was certainly not over with 10 minutes to go as well. So you could definitely argue that, you know, the way that the game was played out, that Poch might have just needed to wait a bit longer. But I would have liked to have seen an earlier substitution.
And Divock Origi scored late to seal the game for Liverpool. He scored 3 goals with 3 shots on target in 2 games in the Champions League.
Just missed accuracy. He just did so well.
It seems like he was a forgotten man, you know, at the start of this season. A lot of people were even asking if he was still on Liverpool's list. You're right. He showed up at the right time of the season for them with over the last 2 games, I guess you'd say. Did fantastically well to score across both semi-final and final.
Jurgen Klopp finally wins a wooden silverware at Liverpool. That was his first victory in a final. I think it's in his last 8 finals. He lost the previous 7. Does that now cement him as one of the best coaches in the world? Because that was always one of the negatives perceived around Jurgen Klopp, that he can't win finals.
At the moment, yeah. Winning the Champions League, obviously you're the best in Europe, one of the best in the world. He's got to win the Club World Cup, though, to be the best in the world.
But there's no club. I don't think there's a Club World Cup next year.
Is there not?
No, I think they've delayed it.
Or delayed it.
I think they might have delayed it.
Well, you look at, obviously, I think current managers, he's certainly in that bracket as arguably the best in the world. You'd look at, his rate in the finals has never been, you know, fantastic or never been on par with your Guardiolas and your Zidanes. I'd like to think that, with what he's done this season, I think he's had one of the best English or Premier League campaigns ever. The run into the Champions League final certainly wasn't an easy one, but he did fantastically well and just shows the names like Origi, Wijnaldum, players that really stood up this season when they really were relied on, and just shows that these players are playing with their heart under a great manager.
That's the one thing that Klopp does better than any other manager, arguably, except maybe Guardiola, that he gets the best out of the players that he has at his disposal. And look at the likes of Jordan Henderson. A lot of people criticise Jordan Henderson for being one, he can only do one thing and he's not a great player, but I've been impressed by Henderson this season. I've also been impressed by how he performed at the World Cup as well. He's been really good this year, even though a lot of people still think he might be a weakness in that team. Plus, Joel Matip playing against Virgil van Dijk, he's turned into a solid defender. It's something that Liverpool, or Klopp's been able to do at Liverpool. They haven't spent excessive amount of money, except for maybe what they paid for Alisson and van Dijk. But the rest of the players there, they all spent a normal size fee for them. Even Mohamed Salah is probably worth over 100 million now, and they only paid 40 million for him last
season.
Exactly
right. We can talk about the increase in fees that we've seen over probably the last, you know, half a decade in players now, and you can definitely argue that both Van Dijk and Becker, whilst being, you know, record deals, have already matched the pedigree of those deals in their one season or 2 seasons they've been at the club. So, I think that those two, whilst they are the outliers when you look at all the numbers, they've certainly stood out as well. So, as for Salah, he's easily a bargain. And the money that they've spent since the Coutinho deal, they've just matched that entirely. And it just shows, you know, where Coutinho is at the moment. Whilst he's still playing good football for Barcelona, he did move there for a Champions League title. and now Liverpool are the ones that lifted it this weekend. We did have a couple questions come through. I do have a couple questions. The first one is from Twitter. Maria said, are you satisfied with the Champions League final?
Well, see, it's difficult because finals never live up to expectations most of the time. They're always tight affairs. And I'm pretty sure in the late 70s and 80s, there was about six to could be up to 10 finals in a row that were decided 1-0. That just shows you how tight it is in a final. Disappointed with the performance, probably, because we expected so much from it, but it's understandable why it didn't live up to expectations.
Yeah, just finals are a whole different ball game. It's all the pressure and the nerves, and clubs just want to get the job done, even if they don't play as attractive as they do.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that, you know, both sides certainly didn't show up and play their best, and the final probably, yeah, it probably was a letdown in some aspects, but the atmosphere itself was fantastic, and the whole competition, I think you'd have to say, this has been probably one of the best Champions Leagues we've seen, certainly in this century. And you'd have to think that whilst the final didn't match up, that the tournament itself was certainly, you know, one to take hold of and an absolute spectacle. Second question I have is, if the Spurs had won, and this was probably a preview question for the game, would they be considered European giants?
Well, this was on the FN site, wasn't it, during the week? I reckon they would have to be, wouldn't they? Because Spurs, they're a massive club now, what they've been able to do in recent years. If you win the Champions League, you've got to be perceived as one of the big clubs in the world.
Yeah, well, they didn't win it, though, but they did make the
final. The Arsenal fan comes out now.
But Arsenal did lose a Champions League final last decade as well. So they are a big club at the moment, yeah. Also, on Facebook, Michael says, where do you think Liverpool need to strengthen in the transfer market?
I think they need to buy another defender. It's more about building on the squad they have. I wouldn't mind seeing them get another striker. I think Firmino's been good this year, but if they could get someone else that's slightly better. There was talk about Memphis Depay, but a lot of people are saying now, well, it's coming out that Depay doesn't want to go to Liverpool because of his links to Manchester United. But if they can get another world-class striker to complement what they've got there, that's something that they'll be able to see them push on and possibly overtake City in the Premier League. I also think they need to fix up their midfield, maybe bring in someone that's more of a goal-scoring midfielder to complement the likes of Fabinho and when Naby Keita gets fit.
Yeah, I think that the two that probably positions that stood out were probably that extra in midfield. They've got, you know, these role players. Oxlade-Chamberlain will come back. You've got Shaqiri, Wijnaldum, Henderson, Keita, and Fabinho as mentioned, and that depth is ridiculously good. But you're probably right. They probably just need that more of an attacking midfielder. The striker position was probably mine. You know, Bobby Firmino, he'll probably be there next season, no doubt. But can he be relied on week in, week out, especially with injuries in that front three? We saw, you know, separate versions were, you know, every month of how they were attacking and how that front three was lined up. So, as for the defence, Joe Gomez will probably start next season. I think Matip might just be that backup centre-back, maybe just a handy full-back in reserve. Obviously, Alexander-Arnold and Robertson this season, ridiculously good, combined for 23 assists in the Premier League. So maybe just that that plan B in a fullback position for me.
Especially on the right side, it looks like Nathaniel Klein would leave. And aside from Alexander-Arnold, the only player that can play there would be Joe Gomez. They did play Milner there as well, but I reckon maybe a younger fullback, or maybe someone with a bit more experience and more of a defensive fullback would be key for Liverpool.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, on to the Europa League now.
Europa
League, yeah. Chelsea winning the match 4-1 against Arsenal. Disappointing match. But Maurizio Sarri's first professional trophy, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. There was those the scenes when after all the players and Sarri was handed the Champions or Europa League winning medals, that he was just holding it there and looked so happy. And it was certainly a sight we hadn't seen from a very animated manager. It was a great moment for him, great moment for Chelsea. I guess you'd call it a farewell match for Eden Hazard.
He called it a farewell match as well.
He said it was very unlikely that this was his last game, at least. But I don't think it would be a farewell for Sarri. We'll touch on that a bit later. But as for the game, Arsenal certainly had the chances in the first half, Tim. Bit frustrating for you, obviously, in that first half. And then Giroud scoring that goal. How'd you see up until that moment?
Well, a bit frustrating is an understatement. Just another disappointment in the Arsenal book. And In terms of improving and going on to win a trophy like that, doesn't look likely given that transfer budget of $40 million. But
You can't buy anyone with $40 million now.
Yeah, exactly.
You have a look at the lower league, or the teams at the bottom of the Premier League, they're spending over $50 million as well. Fulham spent $100 million and still got relegated. Arsenal, they're not going to get relegated, but...
You never know.
What are they going to buy with $40 million?
Oh, someone from the championship, maybe.
Not even.
Same with you look at the three sides that come through. I think it was Sheffield United had quite a limited budget going into next season now. But when you hear like a Norwich or even an Aston Villa have limits of 30, 40, I think 50 million, you still think that's quite small for a club that's coming up. Obviously, they do need to spend and adapt their side when you do make that jump to the Premier League. But even for these smaller clubs or clubs that are coming up from the championship, 40 to 50 million sometimes just isn't enough.
And just given that $40 million budget, they're at risk of becoming a middle-table club, Arsenal. And people may laugh saying, oh, Arsenal is a big club, but if they don't spend, money is big in football now, and they need money, and they need players to come in. If they don't do it, they're going to end up a middle-of-the-table club.
When you look at Newcastle United, if they get their money from their new owners, they will likely overtake Arsenal as well, plus Wolves as well. They're another team that will be overtaking Arsenal. It is a bit of a worry. They need to start spending. And where, if you did have the money to spend, where would be the first place you'd buy?
Oh, I don't know. they're linked with Thomas Munoz. Currently. He'd be a good signing.
They need fullbacks. They need centre-backs. They probably need
Ramsey
another.
Gone, like, and Ozil's question marks.
If I was an Arsenal fan, the part that I'd be disappointed with in that Europa League final was when Ozil walked off the field when he was substituted. They were down, could have been 3-0 at that time. Run off the field. Don't walk.
He's done that quite a few times. Even when they've won, he's been doing that. So it's just the characteristic of him. But just his body language wasn't that great to see. And it looks like he'll be leaving.
He went missing again in a final. They should have sold him at the start of the season. They probably would have got close to 50 mil. They had 50 mil to spend at the start of the year. They would have had 100 all up. Now they'll be lucky to get 30 mil for him.
Yeah, I think that his price tag at the moment certainly dropped. And a player who has been quite hard to read the last 12 months at Arsenal, when he has played, some of the statistics have, he has proven doubters, and then there's obviously a second side of statistics that, those doubters do bring up as well in his game. He's not matching the numbers when he first joined Arsenal, absolutely not. But I still think, price tag will be quite high for him, especially from a few Bundesliga clubs. He is, past 30 now, isn't he? So, I think that, for Ozil moving on, it would probably be the best decision for both him and Arsenal. But looking at that game, massive positive was the Iwobi strike. Will probably go down as
good goal.
One of the most the best forgotten goal in European football for a while. It was absolutely amazing, and it obviously wasn't enough to start or ignite any comeback. But just for Chelsea, they were far too good in that second half, and I thought that both sides did look a bit not fatigued before that Giroud goal, but worked themselves, similar to the Champions League final. But as soon as that came through, Giroud's heading goal, I thought that, the rest of the game was Chelsea's by far.
Let's talk about Chelsea. They do this all the time. They're like Fleetwood Mac. They always perform when there's turmoil in the club. And even last year, they won the FA Cup final when there was all that talk about Conte leaving. And then when they did win the Champions League final in 2012, they had an intern manager, and there was all this talk about players leaving and all that stuff. So they do it every time. There's issues off field. They always find a way to win. Eden Hazard looks like he'll be leaving. Giroud signed a new contract. Next season with Sarri likely to move on to Juventus, is Giroud going to be their number one striker?
I'd hope not. So they'll get Morata back. He'll probably shoot back off to Spain anyway. If there is this transfer ban, then he may very well be. They get Pulisic in, which is, I guess, a great grab for them before this ban came into play. So they do have a fresh face at least. They have, Tammy Abraham certainly get a few runs through the side, assuming they hold on to him as well. I think Giroud certainly isn't, that you want to be starting number nine, but I think he's a player that can certainly step up and has proven it through glimpses this season that, he's a goal scorer and can be when needed. Abraham and him could work well together as certain halves of the game, but they certainly could struggle with that number nine position. But that's been familiar for with Chelsea, the last couple of seasons, probably since Diego Costa left or had that you know, that great run of form in about 2014-15. So, yeah, I'd love to see Abraham starting for them next season. But, yeah, I guess with Pulisic in, Pedro again, probably hold on for next season. Willian, questionable. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Sarri is still at the helm next season, how they line up in that front third.
I wouldn't be surprised if Sarri leaves, but they'll get a decent manager. They're a winning club.
They're linked to Jose Mourinho.
Ooh.
Thor it.
Drama
surely not. Mourinho can't go back there.
The return.
We said early in the year when there was all the talk about Sarri departing that it's likely that Frank Lampard would take over. I think Peter Cech's returning to the club as a director of football. It looks like they want to bring those old players back to the club. If Lampard did come, there could also be that John Terry reuniting. Do you reckon Lampard would be wise to go to Chelsea now? Well, do you think that he still needs a couple more years at a Derby just to gain more experience and learn how to manage a world-class team?
It's always a bit risky for a club legend to return as manager because if it doesn't go well, then their reputation at the club sort of takes a hit. So it's a big risk for him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that, look, obviously with where Derby finished at the end of the season was fantastic, but from Lampard, a very young manager in his first season. I think that if he is to move to Chelsea, it'd be a very rushed job. Certainly something that could backfire, not only on him, but with the Chelsea Football Club. I think what he's done with Derby this season is fantastic, with a very young list as well. And I think that, yeah, just I'd love to see him stay at Pride Park for another season at least. And that's, you know, assuming that that he does need to move on. I don't think he does at this point in time. But we've seen what he can do with a young list, and I think he's obviously a future Premier League manager, but there's no need to rush into it just yet.
Yeah, we should also touch on the sad news during the week. Jose Antonio Reyes sadly passed away. A member of the Arsenal Invincibles team, that just one of the greatest moments or periods in Arsenal's history, and just a sad loss.
Yeah, obviously a shock to everyone. These things, you know, you can never see coming. But it's one thing that you can always look on as more of a remembrance on his career and how everyone's come out following the tragedy and how everyone can remember what was, like you said, a part of that Invincibles campaign. And, yeah, it just shows the influence he had on a lot of the young generation of players that are playing now. And a lot of players came out and said that they had mirrored games off him. And, yeah, it was awesome to see, I guess, in that aspect how players went on about remembering his career.
It was touching to see the entire football community unite for it, and also the minute silence at the start of the Champions League final.
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie!
All right, Tim, we're bringing back Aussie Watch for one final time this season.
Yeah, it's been a while, but
had to dust that Aussie, Aussie, Aussie off.
We will discuss some potential transfers for the Aussie players in England. So one is Aaron Moy. Huddersfield obviously getting relegated a few weeks ago. Where do you see him staying in the Premier League?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, look, whilst he's given a lot to the Huddersfield club and he'd love to, you know, stay with them, he's a Premier League quality player and he'll know that. And there's been, I think, almost, you know, half a dozen clubs rumoured to be after his signature. Wolves, Leicester, Crystal Palace,
Wolves,
Brighton,
Watford, West Ham, Leicester and Southampton.
Just a few. But, look, I'd be shocked if he isn't back in the Premier League next season. Yeah, like I said, that's just the quality of player he is. I doubt I'd see him move abroad from England. And it'd either be, at Huddersfield or in the Premier League one way or the other.
Out of those teams that have been linked to him, who do you think's the best fit?
I wouldn't mind seeing the Southampton move. I think they've got a couple holes in midfield, but, like, mixing with maybe, like, Mario Lemina. Holberg behind him, Ward-Prowse would be, you know, a very dynamic middle three or four, depending on how they do start under Hasenhüttl next year. The Watford one was probably an interesting one. I think, like, Doucouré, Etienne Capoue likely stay with their positions. I don't mind Moy being in that more attacking midfielder position, but I think that with what they've already got, unless a player is to move from the club, they probably shouldn't or won't need to press too much money after him. And as for the rest, there's obviously a few that you'd probably want to see him move to.
Wolves would be tricky. I can't see him overtaking the midfielders that they do have at the club now with Neves and Moutinho as their two starters, plus the guy from Belgium. I can't say his name.
Yeah, and Donker.
That's it. And also Wolves fans aren't, if you have a look on social media, they don't really want Aaron Moy at the club. And same as West Ham. It'd be good to see him at West Ham because they are a massive club. But with the midfielders that they do have at the club now, I can't see him overtaking them. The only one that I could see him replacing is Mark Noble, and he's a club legend. And he was in good form this season, and I can't see him replacing Noble.
Yeah, another player, he's just been released by Aston Villa, Mile Jednak. Do you see him returning to the Premier League or staying in the Championship, even going overseas?
Well, there was a question on our Twitter account asking where Jednak will go. He's probably going to go back to MacArthur or go to the new MacArthur team in 2 years' time, so which means he's got a year to spare. He'll probably go to Saudi Arabia or somewhere in Asia. But if he was to stay in England, I reckon the best club for him would be QPR. They're a team that have a lot of youngsters, a lot of young midfielders in Eze and Freeman as their as two youngsters that are at the start at their quality level. He could give them the experience that they need. They had Jeff Cameron this year that lined up with Luongo, but I reckon Jednak and Luongo in midfield would be great to see.
Yeah, certainly had that chemistry from the start as well. But yeah, like you've mentioned, Eze and Freeman, these players that love pushing forward and wide as well for QPR. And I think that, yeah, just that holding midfielder, obviously also an option to drop into centre-back like we saw with Aston Villa this year. Yeah, QPR could be a fantastic fit. For me, side coming up from League One, Luton Town, you know, a lot of talks on where they'll move in their transfer period. I think midfield is probably that first position. Not necessarily a starter for them week in, week out, Jednak. You know, we're coming with age. He'll probably need a lot more time coming on from the bench. But, yeah, I think that just as the experience, just for one season, like you said, I think the MacArthur group move looks imminent. But, yeah, I think just for this one season, a young group like Luton who have, you know, a lot to push for in their first championship season, it'll be fantastic for them if they did grab a player like Jednak with all that experience.
And the one more player that has been linked to English clubs, and that's Tom Rogic at Celtic. He's been there for six seasons now. There's talk that he might go to Leicester City to link up with Brendan Rodgers, who absolutely adores Tom Rogic. There's also rumours about Southampton, but can you see him leaving Celtic to move to the Premier League?
He doesn't look uncomfortable at Celtic, that's for sure. Six Scottish Premier League titles.
Well, it's the opposite of uncomfortable.
Yeah, comfortable. there you go. But, yeah, look, I think that it'd be... I don't see him having his whole career there, absolutely not. But, you know, I think it would be great to see him in the Premier League. He can fit into... And I think the Leicester system that they've got at the moment would work perfectly for them. Midfield that they've had this season has been fantastic, whilst, you know, Madison is going to be that leader from midfield. You know, they lose Yuri Tillmans back out on loan to Monaco, so he could certainly slot in there. I don't know if he necessarily will be a straight starter for Brendan Rodgers, but certainly a player that can work his way into that 11 in a short amount of time.
And that we're going to go to a break now in the English Football Show. We'll come back after the break. We're going to have Michael Bridges on the line joining us to talk about the Champions League final. Plus, we might talk about the disappointment of Sunderland and Leeds United. Plus, we've also got the top 10 defining moments of the English football season. And we're also going to talk more transfers. Welcome back to the English Football Show right here on FNR Football Nation Radio. We'll have Mark Bridges on the show shortly. But if you didn't hear what we were mentioning at during our commercial break, we asked the question, Leeds United, what if they had the $200 million to spend, from which are rumoured to be that they will be bought by the PSG owners. Obviously, that leads to promotion, Mitch.
Yeah, look, I think that with an astonishing budget like that, it's not all going to be spent within the first season, maybe not even a second or third, but for a massive club and for a manager like Bielsa to have, you know, that amount of money in the back pocket would certainly have, you know, a lot of positives in this off-season or in the next off-season for the club. We know Bielsa has a lot of great links across European football and even South American, but yeah, look, he's did fantastic well, I thought, in his first off-season with the club. And yeah, with that amount of money and investment into a massive club like Leeds, we can certainly see them push into the Premier League in a year's time or two.
Yeah, definitely, that's what you need if you want to be in the Premier League. You need that money, and hopefully for Leeds United, they can get that money because right now they don't have a lot to spend in the transfer period, with Marcelo Bielsa taking most of that money. Joining us now on the line is Optus Sports expert commentator Michael Bridges, and of course you can, well, you can join up to Optus Sport for exclusive coverage of the semi-finals and final of the UEFA Nations League. Plus, starts 4 a.m. this Thursday, and it'll be Portugal and Switzerland. But don't forget, Optus Sport is the only place to watch all 52 games of the FIFA Women's World Cup as well. So, Michael, thank you for joining us on the line. And first, we'll begin with the Champions League final and Liverpool's sixth Champions League crown. What did you make of the game?
It was a bit of a disappointment, I've got to say, after all the tribulations and the amazing goals and matches that we had witnessed in the Champions League. I just felt like the final was a bit of a letdown for the actual playing side of it, the neutral fans that were watching from around the world. It wasn't anything to rave home about, and I think that had a lot to do with the temperatures that were over there. 35 degrees, I know it sounds crazy when we're living in Australia and them temperatures seem normal, but for the English teams that haven't really experienced that throughout their season, to go there and have to try and play the pressing style that Liverpool like to do, they couldn't sustain it for long periods of the game. That had a major effect, and also the 2.5 week break I think the teams had from the Premier League without a game in between, that had affected it. But absolutely devastated for the team that I support in Spurs, but delighted for Liverpool, the manager Klopp and the players, and one of the guys that is from my region in Jordan Henderson, who came through the Sunderland Academy the same as I did, and obviously was a big money signing by Liverpool. There was a lot of questions being asked, was he that good, would he fill Steven Gerrard's boots, and I was delighted that he's proved a lot of people wrong, silenced a lot of them that were very critical of his move. And Klopp is just a manager that I look up to and just admire and respect so much. He just looks like a guy that you would love to play for, because the fans love him, he's embraced Liverpool. And just what he's done to the players, you could tell the way they celebrated with the man. I just absolutely love what he has done for the Premier League and for Liverpool to get their sixth title. So, all in all, either team that were going to get the victory, it was going to be a nice way to deliver it, because of, obviously they're both English teams.
Yeah, well, we'll start with Tottenham first. Obviously, the lesser of the two come the end of the final, but their starting lineup, Pochettino decided to start with Kane, and we saw, by even half time, that he was certainly still struggling with that injury. What were your thoughts on the initial lineup with, Moura off after his semi-final heroics?
I was devastated, actually, for Moura missing out. I thought that was a very, very strange decision by Pochettino. I felt that playing Harry Kane was critical, because the players, they're seen as their leader. He galvanises the team and he scores goals. So, I mean, if he wasn't 100% fit, they wouldn't have played him. And, I feel that he leads the line very, very well. But like you say, after half-time, with the lack of game time, you could see he was just starting to... Van Dijk was beating him to everything. He looked a little bit lethargic. And I thought the change could have come a little bit earlier with maybe Llorente or Moura coming on, but I definitely wouldn't have had Harry Winks and Sissoko playing together. I thought he could have gone a little bit more attacking with Moura for Sissoko and let Harry Winks do all the work in the midfield there, because he's fantastic at getting on the ball. Tottenham tried to play out and break the front press, and they did it very, very well, but it just was so lackluster. There wasn't enough movement for me, and I just don't feel that Trippier and Rose got into the game enough, or Spurs didn't find them players enough in wide areas. They were very, very going central a lot through Ali, Eriksen and Kane, and it just didn't seem to work, and they didn't seem to be able to have a plan B like they did against Ajax in the semi-finals. So, I think when Pochettino reflects back and has a look, maybe Moura should have started for one of the defensive screeners. But in hindsight, saying that, I think Spurs were a little bit wary and scared of the front three and the attacking midfielders of Tottenham. That's why he went for the defensive security with the two sitting midfielders. So it was a very, very tactical game, like a game of chess, but it wasn't great for the neutral to view in the end. But I don't think Liverpool fans will care one bit, because they've got their sixth title.
A lot of debate around the penalty. Did you think it was a penalty awarded?
It's a 50-50 decision because it's come off his chest at first. It's hit his arm, but when I was working and we're talking about it on Optus Sport, you cannot go and defend in the penalty area. I say to my players when I'm coaching, when you're in the penalty area, you defend, you try and put your hands down by your side or behind your back because anything can be given these days. And when you go and you try to close down a cross or close down the area, Sissoko's got his arm up around his ear. Now, the referee's position was right behind the line of that. And he's basically seen, he was blindsided, but he's obviously seen where the arm was. And he's given the decision. So Sissoko's only got himself to blame. And I think the VAR, when we've seen it from the side and also in the studio, it's kind of chest to armpit and onto the arm, but it's still handball. And I think he got the decision correct. I think Spurs fans are going to go, you're absolutely wrong. Liverpool fans will say you're correct. It's still very open. And I still think the laws or the interpretation of the handball are there to be scrutinised and because it's so open-ended. I remember Harry Kewell incident, my mate, getting sent off for the Socceroos on the goal line when it was a very similar incident where it hit his chest and onto his arm on the goal line. He got red carded. They were given a penalty. So it's still a law that I feel that needs looking at in the game.
Well, we'll talk about with the Spurs and you know, another, I guess you could say, promising season. They've gained the Champions League for next season. They made the final this year. Where do you see them turning into next season, maybe spending a bit more in the off-season, and where they might finish just before or ahead of City and Liverpool in the 2019-2020 campaign?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting few weeks for Spurs, and especially for Pochettino. I think if Pochettino is allowed to spend some money, there's no doubt they're going to lose a couple of players because they've got release clauses. Vertonghen and Alderweireld being the players in question. Eriksen's being chased highly. And if they do lose a few players due to them clauses, they're going to have to bring players in. I'm just hoping that Pochettino has that chat with Daniel Levy. And Levy says, you know what it is, we've still got a stadium to pay off. But there is a transfer kitty for you to go and spend, to recruit and put it in the areas that you need to. But also, after not doing anything for a year and a half a season, it'll give some of the other players a kick up the backside to realise that their place is under threat as well, so they don't get in the comfort zone. He's managed that really well this season, and I believe if he doesn't get a transfer kitty, that'll be Pochettino gone. If he does, I'd like to think that he's got unfinished business and he can make Spurs become one of the great teams around the world, like your Manchester United with their history and their logo, and Liverpool. They're the biggest supported fans in Asia, and you know, Spurs are making massive steps to following in that trait. So even though the trophy cabinet's bare, but I still think he's got unfinished business because he can see the bigger picture now. But again, if he doesn't get the transfer kitty, he will not hang around.
If Pochettino does leave Tottenham, where do you see him going?
Great question. There's the Juventus, I thought, was a major one, with Manchester United also. Sarri's in line for that job over in Juve, the Manchester United job. But it wouldn't be, you know, the Real Madrid job was open last year. That's gone now. He could probably walk into any job given the opportunity. But I think if there's nothing available, he will sit around and wait until there's something becomes available, if he doesn't get a transfer kitty. But there's also the international scene. You know, he's Argentina, possibly seeing them into a World Cup over the next couple of years. Going into that would be something that he would have put in his long-term goals, I would imagine, like a 5 or 10 year plan. He'd definitely have an international management role in there somewhere along the way. So it's a tough one to answer, and I can't really speculate because there isn't that many things available at the moment that I think would suit what he would be interested in. And it would cost the teams or the club a lot of money to get rid of somebody that is already in there at this moment in time just to get his services.
Onto one of your former clubs, Leeds United, disappointing end to the season. How do you see him going next season?
Yeah, I was devastated, absolutely devastated. Having travelled over there a couple of times this year to go and support them and cheer them on from the sidelines and see them miss out in the playoff finals against Derby, it was a sickening blow. The only saving grace is Bielsa's hanging around. He's sorted out his contract for him and his staff. It's not just one man that you sign. You sign the whole entourage of staff that come with him. And, you know, Andrea has backed that and said, you know what it is, we'll have one more push and one more go. And, the, you know, the the club, I think if Andre had got the team promoted, they may have sold and he would have cashed in on that and let somebody take over and take them on to the next level in the Premier League with the money that they would have made. So I think they're going to have one more push. They've done fantastic things off the field. The style of play has been magnificent to watch and witness this year in the Championship. There's been some great teams playing some lovely football. One of them went up in Norwich City. They played great football. Aston Villa have gone back up this season. Sheffield United have gone up with a different style of play. And, you know, Leeds have got another year under Bielsa. The players will be delighted because having spoke to a lot of the players there when I was over there, they were buzzing with the way that he developed their game. So they'll be very, very happy they can go again and have one more opportunity.
Have you heard any news about the PSG owners thinking about buying Leeds United?
No.